Alrighty, we watched yesterday on Anzac Day is the drama around the more than 100 pilot whales beached down on Toby's Inlet near Dunsborough started to unfold. Of course, in the morning, it looked pretty dire. I've got to say, it looked very dire for those whales that were beached over around sort of a 500-metre stretch. And then there were plenty of people volunteering to go down there and help get them back out to sea. It seems that that has been a resounding success. Yeah, there have been some whales that didn't make it, but overall, it looks like at this point in time, and we don't say this very often, that those whales, with the help of people, have gone back out to sea. Let's have a chat about the whole situation with Dr. Capri Jolliffe, Chair of the Geograph Marine Research Centre. She joins us on the line. G'day, Capri.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good. Well, go on. Your reaction to the fact that it looks like at this point in time that most of these whales have gone back out?
Yeah, look, it's amazing and a better outcome than we could have hoped for. So I think everyone's pretty happy and just fingers crossed that we don't get any re-strandings today.
What's your take on what happened there? I mean, I know we always say, why do they do it? But what have you sort of been looking at to try and come up with an answer this time around as to why those whales may have gone into that area and beached?
Yeah, look, as you say, we don't really know. It's one of those age-old questions, why do they strand? Strandings tend to be long-finned pilot whales, which is the species that stranded yesterday, one of the main culprits for mass strandings, and that's in part because they live in very big, complex societies and they're very close-knit socially, so they do travel in these huge pods. Where, you know, if one animal comes ashore, they do tend to all come ashore. And because they're deep sea species, they're just not really used to navigating a near shore environment. So anytime they find themselves in close to shore, which we don't typically see them unless they're stranded, it's normally not a good thing. There is a chance that they get, you know, confused and they're not used to the tides and the currents that happen in those shallow waters. Geograph Bay itself is a bit of, it's known as a stranding hotspot, and that's in part because it's a big shallow embayment and it has a really gentle slope. So it doesn't get deep very quickly. It stays shallow very far out. And we think that what happens in areas like that is the sonar-like systems that these animals use to navigate, because the angle of the seabed is so gentle, it doesn't bounce back to them. So they're not actually aware that there's a shoreline coming up. So they probably find themselves in these quite shallow areas that they're not used to navigating and then get themselves in a bit of strife. And we think that that's what typically happens in Geograph Bay and why it's an area where there is quite a high number of strandings of these deep sea species.
There's some reports that while you had the pods on the beach, that there were others still out there in the ocean that might have been, I'll use very basic language here, waiting for the other whales. Do you know anything about that? Have you heard that?
Yeah, look, they travel in these big groups, but within those groups there's often subgroups. So we had what we think is about 160 animals at least that did come ashore. And most of those were in one group, but there were some smaller scattered groups along the coast as well. And then there were possibly up to 100 more that were offshore. I don't know if they were waiting for them or if it's just a matter of they hadn't got themselves in trouble yet. But to be honest, it probably did contribute somewhat to the success of the rescue. That and the quick thinking of the volunteers and just a lot of lucky factors, you know, it being Anzac Day, there was a lot of people out and about early. The animals were discovered very quickly, which is always a critical factor in the success of these rescues, is the quicker you can get them back into the water, the less likely they are to be injured and stressed and the more chance they have of survival. And the more animals that are out in the water, the more likely it is that they'll stay out there and not come back in to, you know, be with their family that's up on the shoreline.
I also think that the tide was coming in when sort of people started to appear on the beach to figure out what to do next. Yeah, okay. Now that
very lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say that must be massively lucky.
That it was incredibly lucky. Yeah. You know, an outgoing tide is just not a good thing when you're trying to. These animals are very big. They're very heavy. You know, a bit of damage happens to them internally when they're up on the sand as well. So the more water you have, when you have water coming in, the better. The other thing about Geograph Bay, and Geograph Bay is very unique in that, aside from being a stranding hotspot, the success rate for refloating animals from strandings in Geograph Bay is unusually high. It's actually the site of WA's biggest known stranding. So there were 320 pilot whales that stranded in Geograph Bay in 1996, and only 50 died, which is insane. Like, that's unheard of. And typically, when you look back through history at the stranding records for Geograph Bay, there's a very high success rate for refloating. And that could be due to any number of things, but I think the fact that it's quite sheltered, so you don't have lots of prevailing waves coming in, you don't tend to get really, really strong winds blowing straight into the bay. It certainly, I would imagine, helps get those animals back out and helps them be able to navigate out without having to battle against all those odds.
I mean, it's obviously encouraging on the fact that, you know, sometimes when humans intervene in this situation, there can be a major success. And I think we've seen that, and we're hoping that we don't, you know, for some reason, see the pod returning. I don't think we will. But there's some conjecture around how many whales did die as a result of this. So do you believe it's sort of in the around the 28 to 31 mark, or do you know?
As far as I know, it's 29 was the update yesterday. Yep. But then whether or not there's any additional ones that may wash up today or not, leaves to be seen.
Okay, and you don't have a sense that because those, or the longer that those whales remain on the shore, that it could be a signal for the other pods to return back? I mean, have they got to be removed quickly? Is there any sort of science around that?
Yeah, so look, certainly when they're in distress in the shallow waters, they are making sounds acoustically, so they are calling out. Yeah. So when you have live animals thrashing around in the shallow water, they are definitely calling out, and that could bring the others back in. There was, again, quick thinking of volunteers. They did pull the dead animals out the water as quickly as they could, so they're actually pulled up clear of the water onto the beach. And I think that's another thing that it may have helped. To remove some of the animals. So obviously, you know, they're not getting caught up on each other. They're less likely to come back in. But because there's no longer any live animals that are thrashing around in those shallow waters making sounds, I don't think that that's going to be a factor in bringing the others back in.
All right. Well, in terms of success, I think it's measured as a win. So I do appreciate you joining us to go through all that with us, Capri.
No problems. Thanks for having me.
Good on you. Dr. Capri Jolliffe there, the Chair of Geograph Marine Research. Yeah, it was extraordinary. I must admit, I started to think, this is going to end badly. But, you know, with the effort of all those people that go down there to volunteer, plus the department coordinating it all, and people like Capri being involved as well, it was a great outcome.